No, on Prop 53.
So I hope that
teachers, firefighters, and nurses. Yes, on 51.
Yes, on 64.
Yes, on 64. Tested, tried, and true.
Proposition 52 on the November ballot does two good things.
A U.S. Supreme Court decision today could unlock prison doors for tens of thousands of criminals in California.
It was a 5-4 decision written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, who joined the court's four liberals in saying the drastic remedy was necessary because the overcrowding was causing needless suffering and death.
I'm Chris Ancarlo, and in this episode of Proposition, we'll be talking about criminal justice reform.
We are beginning tonight with a push to set free thousands of California prisoners and put them back on the streets. 6,500 across the state. Supporters say it will ease an overcrowded prison population.
Prop 47 requires murderers, rapists, and child molesters to stay locked up.
But stops warehousing nonviolent offenders.
The proposition that passed Prop 57 will release nonviolent felons to ease overcrowding.
The pendulum in California has been swinging in favor of reforms that seek to end mass incarceration and limit policing and instead address the underlying causes for crime and focus on different forms of intervention. Three landmark measures, AB 109, Prop 47, and Prop 57, pushed the policy in that direction. But now, Prop 20 is aiming to reverse the momentum just a little bit.
We've been on the right path, and Prop 20 sends us backwards. It will increase incarceration, and it is just going to dig us deeper into the racial disparities of the criminal justice system, all in this moment where there's this national reckoning about the amount of harm and violence that the criminal justice system inflicts on Black people and on Black communities and other communities of color.
Lizzie Buchan is the criminal justice program director for the ACLU of Northern California in opposition to Prop 20. Ron Lawrence is the Citrus Heights police chief and immediate past president of the California Police Chiefs Association. They're backing this measure.
Well, Proposition 20 really is intended to fix some of the unintended consequences of the past criminal justice reform issues, starting with prison realignment that occurred in 2011. Understandably, the U.S. Supreme Court told the state of California, it was then Governor Jerry Brown, that we needed to reduce our prison population. And so to do that, he reduced the prison population by pushing inmates back into the county jail system, as well as into our local communities called post-release community supervision. And that overnight filled up our county jails. You couldn't take misdemeanors to jail at that point. It was because the county jail systems were too full. And so that started this criminal justice reform.
So California, you know, we have about 10 years ago, our prisons were so overcrowded that the Supreme Court ruled that being incarcerated in California prisons constituted cruel and unusual punishment. And so we have come a long way from there. We've had some significant reforms over the past decade, including Prop 47, passed overwhelmingly by voters in 2014, and Prop 57, again, passed overwhelmingly by voters. That was in 2016. And so both of those measures, in addition to some other reforms, have significantly reduced the number of people who are incarcerated in California.
All right, just a quick reminder here on those measures. Prop 47, it reclassified some felonies as misdemeanors and allowed for the resentencing of people who were serving time for one of those reclassified crimes. People with murder, rape, and certain sex and gun offenses were accepted, and the savings created by a smaller prison population were to be redirected to a safe neighborhoods and schools fund. Most drug use was reclassified, as was theft, fraud, and forgery, with damages less than $950.
And then in 2014, Proposition 47 was passed. And Proposition 47 did some things that were good, but they did some things that were unintended. And that's what Proposition 20 will aim to fix.
It's subjective, but like they, you know, as far as this being a compromise, they don't get to call the shots here. The California voters do. And the California voters overwhelmingly supported reform. They overwhelmingly supported Prop 47 and 57. And so California voters have shown that this is what we want. This is not a negotiation with the cop unions. This is the California voters showing what they want. And they have spoken several times in the past, and I'm confident that they will again in November.
Prop 57 came 2 years later in 2016, and it built on 47 by offering parole and good behavior opportunities for people serving time on nonviolent offenses.
Crime rates in California have remained
low. The recidivism has decreased after Prop 47 and Prop 57. So why would we go back to those draconian times when we had high penalties? Why would we go back and try to toughen crime laws now? The harsh penalties did not work in the past.
That's Contra Costa District Attorney Diana Becht and another opponent to Prop 20. And the conversation about crime rates is a big part of considering this measure. The data show lower rates, but Association of L.A. Deputy Sheriffs President Ron Hernandez says the data is missing something.
I'm a detective. I've been a detective now for about 25 years. I've been on the department almost 36. So I've seen everything that has to do with what Prop 20 is trying to fix. When you look at it as how has it affected crime, it's not a true reading of the statistics, because what it has caused is because of some of the crimes being not classified as truly as violent, and the upping it from 450 to 950 for theft, over the years, what ends up happening is these crimes just don't get reported anymore. And we don't track statistically crimes that we believe occurred. If we go out and somebody says, well, you know what, it's just not worth my time, we don't track that as a crime because we need a victim.
Basically, Hernandez is saying that people have lost the motivation to report crimes, which he says has artificially deflated the stats.
And the natural question always is, even me knowing how this works, the natural question is, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And then they give you the honest answer. And then a lot of times people are just like, well, forget it, then it's just not worth my time and effort because, you know, I don't want to down the road find out that now I'm being ordered to come into court for what? So somebody can get a slap on the hand and I miss days from work and, you know, do this over and over again.
Lawrence says the phenomenon has a name.
Criminologists, when you study criminology, they call that the dark figure of crime. That's what that's called. The dark figure of crime is that amount of crime that occurs but doesn't get recorded. It goes unrecorded. And there's a lot of causations for the dark figure of crime.
And so we actually pondered that, like, is there a way to track these crimes that, you know, for lack of a better term, aren't reported? They're reported initially, but there aren't. And there really isn't.
I guess that's convenient for them that there's no data to back them up.
Buchan says there's no indication crimes being underreported, and this is a key part of the debate.
And I think because we are seeing that through Prop 47 and 57, there has been a decrease in our crime and decrease in recidivism, that this is certainly not the way to go. Why go back to those old penalizing systems systems did not keep our community safer?
Prop 20 has four parts. We're going to work through each of them. Part one reclassifies what constitutes felony theft.
So not the first conviction, not the second conviction, but the third conviction of theft. It lowers that threshold from $950 down to $250, and it allows the district attorney to file that charge, what we call a wobbler, which means can be either a misdemeanor or a felony, depending on the case, on a case-by-case basis.
And Lawrence says there's a reason Prop 20 zeroes in on theft.
And what's happened is, up and down California, we've had these organized retail theft rings that will go in and out of our communities, and they will go in and shoplift, they'll go in and steal stuff up to $949.99. And because it's only a misdemeanor, even if they get caught, a police officer is only going to issue them a citation. And those crimes are not aggregated. So that means they can walk out of one store, walk across the street, walk into another store, steal another $949.99, and they're still not going to jail.
I've actually handled cases in the past where I've talked to people that have stolen, and they've asked the question about what the dollar amount was. And it just... you know, it blows your mind because you're like, what? You're actually calculating this stuff?
Buchan questions the notion of an invisible crime wave.
Yeah, there's just no proof that that's true. There's not even a correlation between crime rates and these reforms.
I have multiple retailers in my jurisdiction alone, and this is up and down the state and communities all up and down California, who've gotten so frustrated because they get ripped off all the time. They've stopped calling the police. They know that there's not any accountability. They know that it's going to be another hour for the police officer to come take a report, and the person's not going to jail. They're not going to get in trouble.
Buchan says misdemeanor theft isn't being ignored.
It is still a crime to steal something worth less than $950. You can be arrested for it. You can be prosecuted for it. You can be incarcerated for it.
We know that there are some instances where people have committed multiple theft offenses. And if they fall under the $950, you're right, they do require us to file those cases as misdemeanors. But I think one of the things that we see here is that really this is an effort to roll back Prop 47 and to make it easier to charge certain crimes as felonies.
If somebody's, you know, committing theft to support a drug habit and they get caught and they go into court, there's programs in there that allow them to plead out and complete these programs to better themselves and to move on in life. But right now, the way everything's set up, the incentive is literally go in there, take the slap on the hand, and you don't have to complete any programs.
Yeah, the idea that if we increase the penalty, if we increase the length of incarceration and the collateral consequences, the idea that that would make a positive impact on community safety is really preposterous.
But Lawrence says there is a cost to the greater community.
We lose billions of dollars a year in California to retail theft, billions with a B. And Proposition 20 is going to help us correct that because it really aims to disrupt that organized retail theft ring operation.
And Prop 20 would force certain crimes to automatically become wobblers: firearm theft, theft from an elder, identity theft, vehicle theft, unlawful use of a credit or debit card, and forgery on an access card. And per the discussion we've had so far, the ballot measure creates two new crimes: serial crime and organized retail crime. Those are the ones where the felony threshold drops to $250 on the third offense. The second part of Prop 20 would force the DNA collection from more people convicted of crimes.
So the DNA collection results back to Prop 47. Those crimes that were reduced from felonies down to misdemeanors, we can no longer take DNA samples of those people that get arrested because they're misdemeanors.
And Lawrence says that has limited the DNA pool.
So Proposition 20 says that those specific crimes that were felonies that were reduced to misdemeanors as a result of Prop 47, upon conviction, not arrest on these, upon conviction, that their DNA samples can be collected and added to the database.
Prop 20 would significantly expand this genetic surveillance that we do. It requires DNA collection for very minor offenses, including simple drug possessions, that's possession for personal use, and shoplifting. So first of all, this is gonna disproportionately impact Black and Brown folks who are stopped, searched, arrested, convicted, et cetera, at much higher rates than white people. So they are already overrepresented, disproportionately represented in DNA databases.
Lawrence says there's a nexus between violent offenses and cold cases and drugs.
They're often related. So when we arrest somebody for drug possession or drug sales, their DNA is important because they're often linked to violent types of crimes. Not always, but
what that means is more Black and Brown people will be mistakenly identified as suspects just because they left their DNA at a place where a crime has been committed. That has happened. People have been mistakenly identified and prosecuted because their DNA was at a place where a crime happened, even though they did not commit the crime.
Becton says this part of the measure is a waste of energy and it targets the wrong people.
The drug addiction, many of them arrested or for crimes related to their homelessness, their mental health, their mental illness. Those are the people that we're talking about here when we increase the penalties and also increase the DNA pool. Those are not the people who are out committing the serious and violent crimes in our community.
Lawrence says expanding DNA collection isn't designed to round up more people.
Trying to protect people's civil liberties is important to us, making sure that innocent people aren't incorrectly convicted of crimes. And so DNA samples help us do that.
And Lawrence says there's little difference between DNA collection and another procedure that's synonymous with arrest.
Fingerprints are the same way. So when we arrest somebody, for anytime you get arrested for any crime in California, you're getting fingerprinted and that your fingerprints are entered into a database. Well, DNA samples is much more accurate and much more going to really get to a deeper part of our investigations.
Buchan says, though, DNA is nothing like fingerprinting.
This is very sensitive information that is not just about the person whose DNA has been collected, but also about their extended family. And so this is very private information that would be put in these DNA databases that are not only available or accessible by local law enforcement and state law enforcement, but by federal law enforcement as well. And so this is the Trump administration having access to your DNA just because you have been, you know, caught with, you know, minor shoplifting or or drug possession for personal use. And so it's a very serious consequence.
But Lawrence says investigations have been made more difficult by the inability to collect DNA in many cases.
And since Prop 47's passed, and we've not been able to collect DNA samples on those crimes, cold case hits have dropped exponentially, and particularly violent crime cold case hits have dropped exponentially. This is critically important to us for crime fighting because I can only point to the Golden State Killer here to demonstrate how important DNA collection is for policing.
But Becton, who was one of the prosecutors on the Golden State Killer case, says otherwise.
Well, first of all, the Golden State Killer is a completely different kind of example, because that was solved not necessarily from the DNA pool, but really primarily through genealogy. What we're talking about here is people who are arrested for low-level crimes.
And Buchan says DNA collection doesn't magically solve crimes.
And I know that there's this false idea that the broader the DNA database, the more cold cases will be solved. There is no evidence that would actually happen. We have, this is not hypothetical. We've done it before. We significantly expanded our database in 2004 with Prop 69. The clearance rate for violent crimes, which means the percent that are solved, is lower now than it was then. So it is preposterous to think that expanding it to people caught with a small amount of cocaine is going to actually lead to more violent crimes being solved. It's just, there's no evidence that that would actually be the case.
If 20 passes, DNA collection would largely be tied to an expanded list of nonviolent crimes, which brings us to the third part of this measure, redefining the list of crimes to be considered in parole hearings.
What it would do is exclude thousands of people from consideration for parole after they've served the terms of their offenses. So it restricts people's eligibility for being considered for release from prison after serving those terms.
But Lawrence says this part of the measure is simply trying to fix an earlier mistake.
Well, the other thing that happened with Proposition 57 now, and that was passed in 2016, and as a result of AB 109, this prison realignment, there are certain crimes, in fact, there's 22 crimes that were no longer considered violent crimes. So they were kicked out of the violent crime category. And what that means is that the people that were convicted of these 22 crimes now then became eligible for early release from prison.
Human trafficking of a child
is not considered a violent crime in California. Abducting a minor for prostitution is not a violent crime in California.
Rape by intoxication.
Rape of an unconscious person.
Felony sexual penetration, sodomy, or oral copulation with drugs are used or the victim is unconscious.
A drive-by shooting or a shooting in an inhabited dwelling.
Assault with a firearm.
Felony domestic violence. And by the way, that one has the word violence in its title. So how it's not determined that violent crime is beyond me.
Felony assault with a deadly weapon.
Serial arson.
Solicitation to commit murder.
Assault with caustic chemicals. So someone can throw acid on your face, disfigure you for the rest of your life, and it's not considered a violent crime.
Assault by a caregiver on a child under 8 that could result in death or coma.
A felony assault using force likely to produce great bodily injury.
False imprisonment, taking a hostage when avoiding arrest, or to use as a shield.
Assaulting a police officer with anything except a firearm.
Exploding a bomb to injure people.
Think about the Boston Marathon bombing. Felony hate crime.
Any felony where a deadly weapon is used.
Felony use of force or threats against a witness or a victim of a crime.
Felony elder or dependent adult abuse. Any crime requiring lifetime
290
sex offender registration.
So, as a police chief, it's appalling to me that these are not considered violent crimes.
Becton says the list is a bit misleading because the decision is still ultimately up to a parole board. And in the case of most of these crimes, they're associated with other offenses on the violent list that mirror the nonviolent list.
It's really not a measure that is closing a loophole that is allowing child molesters and sex predators to be released earlier. I think what this is, and again, I should also reiterate that we have very tough sentencing laws already for those kinds of crimes. And certainly we also have certain measures in place that could cause some of those people to spend life in prison. And so we have those measures in place for those who are truly committing serious violent crimes in our community.
Buchan says the list is embedded in the penal code.
Law enforcement created the list. Anyone could technically anyone could be involved in fixing that list.
But critics of Prop 57 bring up the list during virtually every conversation about the measure. For them, it's the most glaring omission of the proposition.
And by definition of keeping it in a nonviolent category, when it comes to their sentencing, it gives them the ability to get out of jail sooner than they should.
Still, though, Buchan says making it through the parole process is more difficult than people realize.
I believe in 2019, 19% of people were found eligible. So the vast majority of people are not determined to be eligible by the parole board. And so Prop 20 would raise that standard, make it even harder for people to return to their communities and to their families.
Prop 20 limits rehabilitation because it reduces the likelihood that people in prison, those who are going to be getting out and returning to our communities no matter what, it reduces the possibility that they're prepared for release. And that's not really good for public safety.
Lawrence says more needs to be done to take bad criminal actors seriously.
You can decriminalize things all you want. You can change crime categories. You can knock crime, violent crimes out of violent crime categories. That doesn't mean they're not occurring. And that doesn't mean there's not a victim attached to that behavior.
Which brings us to the fourth part of this measure.
Since AB 109 was enacted, they can only consider the inmate's most recent charge, not their entire criminal history. The problem and the danger with that is you've got people who have been convicted of serious crimes like a homicide or a rape or a child molest or elder abuse, some type of heinous crime. They've been out in prison. Now they've committed some low-level crime, and maybe they've been in and out of prison several times. I mean, look at the guy that just murdered or shot at the two LA deputies and got arrested. This is a guy who'd been convicted of multiple felonies, right? He was a convicted felon. And because he was out of prison, here he's now able to go out and do these heinous crimes. The prison board of parole hearings needs to be able to consider an inmate's entire criminal history.
And Prop 20 would allow just such a consideration.
But it gives them a full picture, and they deserve to have a full picture. And California deserves our board of parole hearings to have a full, entire assessment of that individual, not just their most recent charge.
I don't think that that's right. I mean, someone's past is not a predictor of their future. I think that just completely denies people's abilities to change and to grow and to mature. Committed some shopliftings when they were a teenager, that doesn't mean that they're going to be more likely to do it in their 30s. I shoplifted as a teenager and I haven't done it since, and I don't intend to do it ever again. And so just because someone has done something in their past doesn't mean that they won't grow out of it.
For Becton, this focus on lists and expanded considerations for parole boards misses the point.
I think we need to focus our attention and our money on keeping communities safe, lowering recidivism rates, and putting the money into programs that can help victims, that can help rehabilitation and reentry into our society.
And that's an important detail. Part of the selling point of 47 and 57 was the cost savings that would be realized by thinning out the state's prison population.
The reason I stand against it is that I think, first of all, the fiscal impact is one that we have to pay attention to. Our legislative analyst office has indicated that this proposition will cost tens of millions of dollars, and that money is better spent, as we all know, investing in victims. That is an effective way to improve public safety. And Proposition 20 will certainly slash the funds for programs that work, and they will waste money on more prison beds that we simply don't need.
But Lawrence says money is being hemorrhaged in other less visible ways.
California's already getting hit in the pocketbook by Prop 47. Organized retail theft has cost California up more than 25.9% since Proposition 47 has passed. And I'm talking billions of dollars, billions with a B. And we have businesses leaving California because they are tired of being ripped off. They're tired of constantly getting battered over this stuff. And as you, as the consumer, as I mentioned, we're also paying higher prices at the cash registers.
And Hernandez says the measure is directed at people already in prisons to keep those unfit from gaining early release.
And we're not asking for any changes in, so much for the future other than take these and categorize them. This isn't supposed to put more people in prison. It's basically categorizing them to the positions they should be.
And one thing you'll hear is, oh my gosh, Proposition 20 is going to throw much more people back in prison. That's a lie. It specifically and explicitly says that someone that's convicted of theft, the theft piece, they have to do either some type of rehabilitative program or they do time in county jail. They're not to go back to be sent back to prison.
But Buchan says you don't need to send more people to prison to push the prison population up.
Longer periods of incarceration mean higher prison populations. There's, you know, the population of a facility is dependent on who goes in and who goes out. Even if you're not changing who goes in, if you're restricting who gets out, the population is going to go up. And again, it seems clear from their messaging that they do think that more people will go in, or that seems to be their hope.
Lawrence also says this ballot measure will bring some ancillary benefits.
The other thing that Proposition 20 will do is help us address the explosion of our homeless population in California. I don't think there's any arguing that we have seen an explosion of homelessness in our state. And by the way, you can connect those dots right back to Proposition 47.
Lawrence says the decriminalization of drug offenses has kept people from the help they need, and their habits have driven them to commit crimes such as theft that they can more easily evade prison time.
And on a case-by-case basis, the district attorney and the judge and the public defender can make a decision on what help that individual needs, and that very well could be drug court. And that's where the criminal justice system is going to get these folks the help that they need.
But Buchan says Prop 20, it's not the sort of measure that'll take a big bite out of the homelessness crisis.
Yeah, I mean, the options at our society's disposal are not incarceration or drug court versus homelessness. There's more that we can do. There are people with serious mental health needs, with substance use needs, with other needs that are not being met. And there are ways that we can meet them that don't involve long periods of incarceration or even going through a drug court.
As for the overall pipeline to jails and prisons in California, Hernandez has a counterintuitive take.
If we get back to holding people accountable for some of these crimes, that in fact, less people would go to jail. Because right now what we have is probably a lot of people going to jail, just not for a long period of time.
All right, so let's call it a question here, right? What's before voters in the form of Prop 20? A yes vote means you're in favor of treating some of the state-listed nonviolent crimes as though they are violent felonies for the purposes of deciding parole. The measure would also expand mandatory DNA collection to include the conviction of certain misdemeanors. And some forms of theft and fraud would be treated as wobblers. And parole boards could consider more than just the last crime that sent a person to prison.
I would say preparing people for release by spending money on programs that reduce recidivism and that help victims is the most effective way to keep our communities safe. We should not be spending an additional tens of millions of dollars on more prison beds that we do not need. Proposition 20 will slash funding for what is working. That's why law enforcement leaders, that's why budget experts and crime victims all oppose Proposition 20.
I don't think I've met a victim yet who actually says, yeah, I'm good with Prop 47 or 57. The victims are screaming out there, and they feel left out. They feel left out. They feel ignored. And I feel for that because, you know, just like I go to work every day for, you know, people, good people that live in areas that are high crime areas, I go to work every day for them. And same thing with the victims. We go to work every day for, you know, to protect these victims. And so it's kind of a tough pill for us to swallow.
You know, it's very clear that the sky has not fallen in this era. And meanwhile, what we do know for certain is that fewer people are incarcerated, and that is a good thing. There are more people who are staying with their families, they're staying with their communities, they're staying in their jobs, staying in their schools, and not being, you know, thrown in a deadly petri dish. It will result in more crowding in our prisons, more crowding in our jails. We've already seen from the pandemic that even though California has significantly reduced incarceration, we have clearly not gone far enough to make these facilities actually safe and humane for people.
I grew up here. I live here. I've served this state as a police officer for over 30 years, as a police chief for almost a decade. I care about this state. I protect victims. And if they care about California and they want to keep California safe, they need to vote yes for Proposition 20. because this is all about protecting victims, and it's about making our state safer.
And this is a jam-packed measure, so take your time, think about it, really just kind of go over the details. And thank you very much for listening through all of these arguments and counterarguments, and thanks to those who made their respective cases. Contra Costa DA Diana Becton, ACLU Northern California Criminal Justice Program Director Lizzie Buchan, Association for Los Angeles Deputy Sheriff's President Ron Hernandez, and Citrus Heights Police Chief and immediate past president of the California Police Chiefs Association, Ron Lawrence. Coming up on the next episode, the rent is too damn high, so we'll be discussing rent control. I'm Chris Ancarlo, and I may or may not approve of this podcast.